probably guess the title of our message today. So keeping with my theme of the year, so begin the year we did one. And one was about being one as a church, unified, one body. So we live in the most diverse, multicultural city in England. That's official. If you go to the UK government statistics, as a church, we're meant to be an example. We are one. After that, we looked at two, if you remember. And that's saying, like, really, in the life, we need somebody with us. We need a spiritual companion, a friend. So whether that's husband, wife, or just a good friend within the church, a brother or sister, we all need somebody because we all have ups and downs. Often, we come on and up, we come through God. But when times are challenging, you need that friend to help you up. And that's two. My subtitle, three is better than two. Two is better than one, three is better than two. And we had our reading a few minutes ago, Ecclesiastes 4, 9 to 12. And let's think particularly of the last line of that particular passage. But let me read again. Two are better than one, because they have a good return for the labour. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. But pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. And if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. A cord of three strands is not quickly broken. And even if you think of strings or ropes, if you have one little string, give that a good jack, they can break quite easily. You know, put that under your foot or rub it, it will break. Two is a bit harder. Normally if you have a rope, like this one here, of three strands, and even each strand is made of different yarns inside there, you try, go home and find a rope with three strands and try and break it, you'll find it near impossible. So three is definitely stronger than two, which is definitely way stronger than one. But really this is a build-up of, okay, well, what is that third strand? And I think I alluded to it last time around in when I talked about two. But really that's by having God and Christ. Having Jesus is the third strand. So there's me, and there's you, and there's Jesus. Jesus is the third strand. And again, I often think for ourselves, particularly for men, but applies to everybody, often in life, let's be honest, we have very shallow, superficial conversations. We have them at work, we have them with our neighbours, our friends. Sometimes even in the church, we'll have those moments where, particularly for men, we'll talk about anything except how we're feeling and how we're doing. So we'll talk about the football, Leicester City are in relegation trouble, who knows if they're going up or down. We'll talk about politics, we'll talk about maybe Donald Trump or the wall or America, the rising price of petrol, bills. There's anything that we'll talk about except how we're feeling and how we're doing, and especially spiritually, how we're really doing spiritually. And really, it's this concept of saying, well, really, in our conversations, we need God or Jesus in our conversations. We need to be God-centered, Jesus-centered conversations. That's the third strand. Again, well, a lot of people know I used to live in Cyprus. So I lived in Cyprus for 15 years. In Cyprus, they speak Greek. I don't really speak much Greek, by the way, very little. A lot of people spoke English. In my workplace, they spoke English. There's a lot of tourism in Cyprus, so you can get everywhere with English. But the real language is Greek. I did go to Greek classes, I did try in some places, especially in the middle of the island, up in the villages or away from the coast, you did need Greek. But the interesting thing is the Bible itself is also, or the New Testament, was written in Greek. It was not written in English, and again, I've had this debate with some people fairly recently about which version of the Bible should we use? Should it be the King James Version, or the NIV version, or some other version? What version do we use? And I've even heard people, this is something I read a week ago, King James Version, if you don't use that, you're terrible, you're going to hell if you don't use the King James Version. That's all. That's the version chosen by God. Except that was written and released in 1611. Or I'll tell you one thing, which is Jesus This might be a shock to some. Jesus did not speak English. He did not speak King James English. He did not speak modern English. Actually, probably spoke Aramaic, in actual fact. Maybe knew a few smattering words of Greek. Greek was the general language of the time that was spoken widely in the Mediterranean area through Alexander the Great and the Greek Empire. So most people in writing or communications internationally knew Greek. That's why the Bible was written in Greek. But if you want to go deep into the Bible, Moses said, well, forget what version of the Bible you're doing. Go to the Greek, because that's guaranteed what the Bible was written in. And again, I've been to Lydia's home, so you can actually kind of cheat. You have the Greek here, the English underneath, and the words match, and you can match each one. But anyway, why do I mention this? Because I say I live in Cyprus, and it's easy to have those little shallow conversations, the little shallow greetings. But like in English, we'll go, how are you? We'll see the neighbour, how are you? But we don't really expect a real answer, do we? We just expect, oh, I'm good. Oh, the weather's fine. Yeah, it's nice today, isn't it? How are you? You don't really mean it. You know, the question is, you're not saying hello or good morning, it's how are you? Oh, I'm fine, I'm good. And in Greek, there's one magic word that I love the word, but it's the word endaxi. Endaxi. Which basically just means, well, actually everything. It means okay, good, fine, yes. And so in any conversation, whether you spoke Greek or not, you answer with endaxi, anything should speak Greek. You know, oh, how's the weather today? Endaxi. Will we finish church at 12:30 today? Endaxi. How's the weather today? Endaxi. How are you getting home? Endaxi. Endaxi. That word just means anything. And again, people are looking, think, oh, you're English. How do you speak such good Greek? I haven't a clue what they're saying. It's just every few sentences I go, endaxi. Endaxi. Good. But often, in real life, in our English, let's be honest, we kind of do the same. Yeah, I'm okay, I'm fine, I'm alright. And so really, you say, well actually, there's times where we have to genuinely ask the question. And again, it's more like tone of voice and expression. You can tell if somebody really means it. There's a difference between how are you and how are you really? How's life? You know, if you look at people in the eye, you know, how are you? And then you expect an answer, people go, well, actually, maybe I'm not doing so good today. A good question you can ask people, this is something I was training once, is just ask him, okay, out of 10, how do you feel? Because normally I feel terrible, and depressed and discouraged. But most people are normally in between, aren't they, in life? And we say, okay, how are you out of 10? Okay, I'm 6, I'm 7, or I'm 1. If you're 1, you need some serious help. 10, well, actually, you better be in the mountaintop and, you know, have a high spirit. So most people in between. Again, often it's a conversation. You say, well, okay, how can we nudge you up at 1 or 2? How can we get you to a 7 or an 8? What's kind of wrong? Or how can we picture a place where we can help you get to 7 or 8 or 9 or improve yourself? But it does come down to asking these questions or the choice of words that we use, because words are very powerful. Use the wrong word, we get upset easily, let's be honest. You know, say the wrong word, you know, say the right word, we might hear it, we often hear praise, but we always hear criticism, we always hear those negative words. So words are important, they build us up. That's what we communicate with. I think sometimes even our spiritual matters, even our, quote, spiritual conversations, sometimes we have debates instead of devotion. Or maybe we have opinions instead of obedience. Or maybe we have criticism instead of Christ-centered encouragement. But that's not what God wanted. God wanted us to draw people closer to Him and to each other. In Ephesians 4:29, it says, do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building each other up. And often, if we think about what words we should use, We don't need a big manual, it's not a big mystery, because normally we know the words we like to hear, let's be honest. We know what we want to hear. And just like, well, if I was that person, I should say the same words to them. Because I know what encourages me, what makes me feel good. And often it's just a word of appreciation. Again, I know in my workplace, sometimes we get awards or certificates or little monthly prize. And they're kind of nice in themselves. But actually, I find in my own experience, and this might be many of you as well, it's just if your boss says thank you. There's nothing actually better than just your boss saying, thank you for doing that for me. I really appreciate that you did that for me today. And that's far more important. That's worth more than the little gifts, because my personal opinion. And those are the words that we want to hear. Gratitude, encouragement, things that we've done well. Or even just saying, I listen, I've heard you. A lot of the time we just want to be heard, don't we? Yeah, you know, just a nod. Yeah. I mean, my son, actually, he's autistic, if you know my son. Which in his form of autism, well, in most, you don't understand emotions very well. You can't tune in to people. You can't communicate. So you've got a wonderful memory. My son will give you facts about everything. He can talk for 2 hours about Japanese anime or about animals in the zoo. His mind is superb. But in terms of understanding people's emotions or when a conversation should end, like sometimes I think, okay, my ears are tired, I want to stop this conversation. For most people, you know when people are drifting off, when they're not paying attention. My son, he doesn't. He will keep talking, keep going. And so actually, in fact, when he was younger, because he would listen, and he'd just have this stony face. But he was taking in every word. He would hear every word a teacher or a friend or somebody in church, a preacher would say. He would hear every word, but just be like, literally like this. I'm looking at Dota, I don't know why. It's just because you're in front of me. But he would just be. And emotionally, that can be quite intimidating. And certainly, if I'm Dota, I think, well, you're not even listening to me. You know, what are you doing? So I had to teach people just to nod. The simple thing that we all take for granted, like, like, actually, once you're nodding now, you're going, Because we need to know that you're listening. A stony face means you maybe just asleep, you're switched off, not there. We need emotional connection. We all need those things. So whether it's in our expression, whether just that, literally. And just speak the words, all those build our faith, encourage us. So they will encourage our faith, they will strengthen believers, they will bring healing, they will inspire obedience. So take God out of that conversation, out of the centre of those conversations with human beings. And you're very easily, and I'm sure we've all been there, to gossip, or complaining, or judging others. But that's our human nature. We always want to, oh, well, I'm better than them, or they did that wrong. We used to be everywhere, don't we? Let's be honest, our workplaces, or even, I live in a block of flats. So recently, we started forming a residence committee. And that's because there's a lot of problems in our flats, actually. We have a lot of leaks, bin stores, messy, the car park, the gates don't work. There's many problems in our building, but the point is, it's very easy to complain. And we do it all the time in our building. We have a WhatsApp chat. And what's the WhatsApp chat dominated by? Oh, that's broken again. They didn't do that. Oh, this person left a bin bag by the door again. Oh, and we all do it. And it's very hard to actually be positive or try to put positive comments in there. And then even when we had this committee, so actually they elected, funny enough, they said, okay, we're going to form this new residence association, and it's kind of too much for one. We have one excellent chap, he's a professor at DMU, good old DMU. He's a professor there, he's wonderful. He says, I don't want to be the chair, I'm very good at organising, and I'm taking minutes and doing things, but we need somebody else. And so eventually actually settled down to some people nominated me because I've been involved. I said, well, I don't really be the chair. There's another lady who's in a tribunal against them, who's very hard line. So we have three different characters, is the point. So our professor, he's very organised. He writes wonderfully, he's very well controlled. All his words are beautifully balanced. Writes better than me, beautifully balanced. Okay, we've got this problem, this is how we can solve it, this is all good. Me, I try to be more the middleman. When I speak to property management company, I kind of go more for a win-win. Or how can I help you, help me, to help you, to help the residents? So I try to do this kind of first of all, working in a way. Our new chair, she's the hardliner. She's the one, like, fear her. She's the one, like, oh, attend the tribunal, the law. Then people in the meeting said, well, that's perfect for us because they thought of the triumvirate, which is the Latin word. The three of you together have different skills. You all bring something different to what we want for our committee. And so three, in a different biblical sense of what I'm talking about, three is better than one. Well, actually, maybe there's a point because we all have different skills, different talents, different ways we contribute, and even in church, you need different types of people. Like last time I said, okay, you need a Paul and a Barnabas. Sometimes you need good cop, bad cop. You need different people. But even there, you want to be positive. So again, with the committee or put out a newsletter, you want to share the good news. What's good? What's been fixed? So again, on a Friday, I'll email back and say, okay, we're going to immediately fix the bin store roof. So again, our secretary immediately put out an email, this is a victory. We've got them to do this this roof, and that's kind of good news. In 2 days, look, we've got a result. And that's what you want to hear. You want to hear good. We all want to hear good news. You want to hear good news. But we have to give that good news. We are the messengers. We are the people, the feet on whom good news travels. And I think actually also some of this also comes down to honest speaking. Sometimes we have to speak honestly. Sometimes not too honestly. We need to choose our words carefully. But normally we have the other problem. We're normally too shallow, or especially for English people, we'll say that we pretend there's no problem when there is. You know, if we get the wrong food in the restaurant, English people will go, oh, and the waiter comes up. We'll go, oh, how's the food, sir? Oh, it's fine. But really, no, it's undercooked, it's raw. And some nationalities would just send us straight back. This is wrong. Wait. English people would go, no, that's fine, sir. Again, if we think of honest speaking and minded of King David. So King David, he wasn't a perfect person. He made many mistakes. But what he was good at was honest dialogue with God and even with people. And again, you know, just think of one or two Psalms. Psalm 88. And again, think of any other book or place or political or religious leader who would expose themselves in this way or speak in this way. You will not hear from any of our politicians, I guarantee. Psalm 88, verse 6 to 8. You have put me in the lowest pit, in the darkest depths. Your wrath lies heavily on me. You have overwhelmed me with all your waves. You have taken from me my closest friends and have made me repulsive to them. I am confined and cannot escape. My eyes are dim with grief. I think that's an honest conversation with God and even how he sees his friends and the people around him. One more Psalm, Psalm 13, verse 1. And again, just think of the anguish David must have felt at this point. How long, Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and day after day have sorrow in my heart? How long will my enemy triumph over me? And we all have those days when we wrestle with our thoughts, where we don't know the answers, we're confused, what's the answer? How am I feeling today? We all have those days. But what needs is honest conversations with God, also with each other. Because again, what drives us? What makes us different to our work colleagues, to our neighbours, to people in the world, to people in the city of Leicester? How? Where do we get that power from? It will be from Jesus. Jesus is the third stroke, the third cord. He's the one that drives and propels us. You know, those days when we struggle to love someone, maybe our friends, our neighbours, our family members, either brothers and sisters in the church, locally or nationally, and we struggle to love. But what makes us different to those in the world who say, well, I'm not going to talk to you, I'm going to ignore you, I'm going to gossip and slander about you. What makes us different is Christ. Christ's love compels us and makes us be different. And if we understand Christ, the love of God, and the love of Christ, and Him dying upon the cross, and forgiveness of sins, that is the inner fire that reverberates within us to make us different people. 2 Corinthians 5, 11 to 15. Since then, we know what it is to fear the Lord. We try to persuade others. What we are is plain to God, and I hope it is also plain to your conscience. We're not trying to commend ourselves to you again, but giving you an opportunity to take pride in us, so that you can answer those who take pride in what is seen, rather than what is in the heart. If we are out of our mind, as some say, it is for God. If we are in our right mind, it is for you. For Christ's love compels us, because we are convinced that one died for all, and therefore all died. And He died for all, that those who live should no longer live for themselves, but for Him who died for them and was raised again. We are those people that Jesus died for. And we are the one that His love, Christ's love, compels us within our hearts to be a different people. Which is in the words that we say, but also I think in our actions, in what we do, how we live our life. Because in reality, most people look at what you do. You know, particularly when they look at Christians, oh, you're a Christian, are you? Like everyone work as a Christian, oh, you're a Christian? And they look for ways of, oh, do you gossip, do you lie, do you get angry? They're kind of looking, they're trying to check all out, because they don't care about your theology. They're not going to ask you questions, what you believe. It's like, do you live the life? Are you really doing it? Are you really Christian? I'm watching you. And even for, we said this before, even for our children look at your parents and go, are they living the Christian life? They look at these. And so the passage I will read shortly. Actually, I'll read the passage first. James 2, verse 14. And in this passage, we have to think of care, because actually sometimes people abuse this passage, by the way. Context in the Bible is always super important. And this is how it reads, verse 14. What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if someone claims to have faith but has no deeds? How can such faith save them? Suppose a brother or sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says to them, go in peace, keep warm and well fed, but does nothing about their physical needs, what good is it? In the same way, faith by itself, if it is not accompanied by action, is dead. But someone will say, you have faith, I have deeds. Show me your faith without deeds, and I will show you my faith by my deeds. You believe there's one God? Good. Even the demons believe that and shudder. So it's not saying we're saved by deeds or works. We're not. Let me be very clear. We're in no way saved by works. But if we have faith, and Christ's love compelling us, and that faith is a true faith in Christ, deeds will naturally follow. How can you not love somebody if you have the love of Christ in you? If you have faith in God and His mercy, how can you not be merciful to others? It cannot be true faith. It's just a belief. Because Satan, the devil, and the demons believe there's a God. Belief in God doesn't save you. I believe in heaven and hell, there's judgment and resurrection. The devil does. We're not the devil. We are Christians. Christ's love empowers us. And even when we think of this picture, and again, you know, maybe times have been rough for me. I've lost my job. Hungry, I'm starving, I'm homeless. I'm at the pavement, like this guy on the left. Please tell me. Thank you. And I've been there for days. I've lost weight, I'm thin. I'm shaven. My clothes are smelly. I've been there maybe even weeks. Maybe Brother Anthony, he's come past in his nice little car. He's done very well in life. He's bought a coach, took his coaches. He's taken over National Express. He now runs the whole coach-wide business in the UK. He's now a millionaire, a multi-millionaire. And he comes past his little BMW and he sees me by the side of the road. And he stops, because Brother Anthony's nice. He stops, "Hey, Brother Dylan, how are you today?" Actually, times are hard. I'm hungry, haven't eaten for 4 days. I'm showered, I know where to sleep, I'm just sleeping here in the pavement. Brother Anthony, brother. And Anthony just says, "Keep warm and well fed." And he closes the window and he drives off. You would not think that was Christian love, you think. Well, the words mean nothing. "Oh, I'm praying for you." Yeah, because again, this is equivalent to, "I pray for you. I'm praying your needs will be. I pray to get some food." And maybe in his boots, he's got 5 bags of Sainsbury's shopping in the back. I said, "I pray to get some food." Some bread or milk, just something from your boot. The faith has to be shown in what we do. Whether somebody's in need and just needs an emotional outlet you listen to, or it's out of a physical need. And as church, we're very good with meeting compassion needs. We've got the Doton's Charge of Evidence, so we do actually a very good job of leading this church. But we have to help individuals and the people around us. We can't leave it to Doton. The Bible doesn't say, "And leave it to Brother Doton and he'll sort it out." Or Brother Anthony should be going, "Tell you what, I'll phone Brother Doton and see if he can get you some food. Because it's in his car, he can help. He's there." We're all called as individuals to help each other physically, spiritually, emotionally. Again, if you think of the early Christians, first century or two, and how the Romans and the critics thought of the early Christians in the early days, thing that you marked out the most wasn't about their belief or their follow this Messiah or this Christus or whatever. Often it was because they showed love and mercy and did things that the normal population did not do. They looked after the sick, the homeless. Their communities were strong. They're like, "Well, that community, they actually help each other. Us pagans, us other followers of Roman gods, we don't do that. And these Christians, wow, tell you what, they help each other. They're close." And so I'll read one final quote, I think I'll at the bottom part of there. But this is written by Dionysus. "So there'd been a plague in the Roman Empire." You think of COVID times, actually. "There'd been a plague, the Cyprian plague. Lots of people were dying. Up to a third, a half of cities, people were dying. Everybody's in panic, they're fleeing, they want to avoid the trouble. And who was helping the sick, the people? It was the Christians. The Christians, and the Romans noted that. Again, let me just read here. "Most of our brother Christians showed unbounded love and loyalty, never sparing themselves and thinking only of one another. Heedless of danger, they took charge of the sick attending to their every need and ministering to them in Christ. And with them, departed this life serenely happy. For they were affected by others with a disease, drawing on themselves the sickness of their neighbours, and cheerfully accepting their pains. Many, in nursing and curing others, transferred death to themselves and died in their stead. The best of our brothers lost their lives in this manner. The heathen behaved in the very opposite way. At the first onset of the disease, they pushed the sufferers away and fled from their dearest, throwing them into the roads before they were dead, and treated unburied corpses as dirt, hoping therefore to avert the spreading contagion of the fatal disease. But do what they might, they found it difficult to escape. And that is the difference between Christianity and heathen, is the way you live your life. People look at us, people judge us. In the first or second century, we don't have this problem today. They would die for their faith. That's the question. Would you die for your faith? Would you die just to even help somebody? The inconvenience of, oh, I'll have to stop my car and get a shopping bag out of the boot to feed for the dealer who's starving. These people are dying. They're dying. So in conclusion, in our relationships with each other, with the world, with God, let's just think of our relationships. This is a reflective question. How often is Jesus in the middle? And that's a deep question. Just take that away, think about your mind for a moment. How often is Jesus in the middle? In our words,